Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shit podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. I'm your host, Christina Castagnini. For so many of my patients who struggle with eating disorders, they have a history of symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder from a previous trauma. How this manifests in their body is, of course, different for everyone. However, this can include dissociating from their body, having intense feelings of anxiety and fear, rumination, and struggles with body acceptance and awareness. Now, there's a growing awareness about this, and there's research surrounding the impact of trauma on the body and the mind, and that's really exciting. And what we're finding is that people often turn to harmful coping mechanisms to alleviate their distress that they experience from the trauma. For many people, they'll seek some type of therapeutic treatment that aims to help them alleviate this distress or learn other less harmful ways to cope. However, I have with us today a guest who is here to discuss something very exciting and new that can help augment someone's current treatment using a mind-body approach to alleviating their symptoms. Mary Ortenberger is a licensed marriage and family therapist in private practice in Claremont, California. She's a certified eating disorder specialist and supervisor and a certified Gestalt therapist. In addition, she is a yoga therapist in training with Be the Change Yoga, working to become a certified yoga therapist, and has a small trauma-informed yoga studio in her private practice for clients and members of the community. All right. So Mary, I'm so excited to have you here.
Yeah, so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, I saw some of your posts on LinkedIn about trauma-informed yoga. And, you know, I think for me, even I was like, well, what is that exactly? It got me intrigued. And so I started to read more about your posts. And then we talked briefly and said, oh, my gosh, I really have to have you on here. So really thrilled you're here.
Yeah.
So I know lots of people know what yoga is.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe some people don't even know the benefits of just yoga itself. So I don't know if you could just speak to that initially and then kind of go into what trauma-informed yoga is.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's a lot of emerging research on the use of yoga with trauma and mental health and the physical body and things of that nature. I think in the West, we think of yoga as these beautiful postures or these breathing exercises. So the asanas or the pranayamas, but there's actually 8 limbs of yoga. And so in these different yoga sutras and all the history of how yoga didn't evolve, obviously, in the West, it's really in line with what we're doing therapeutically anyways, which is examining people's views of themselves, their relationship with the world, kindness to themselves and others. So, I mean, without getting too deep into it, I think we generally think in the West of just sort of this fitness practice or this flexibility practice of yoga, but it's really much more comprehensive than people realize. Or maybe, I mean, even when I entered yoga, I wasn't aware of a lot of those things, but with time can see like how the benefit impacted me personally, which drew me into what I'm doing now.
So that's interesting. I mean, would you mind talking a little bit about how you got into yoga and how to benefit you?
Yeah. You know, I sort of joke, I joke with one of my clients that has been into yoga forever. And I'd be like, oh, it's too trendy. I'm not doing that. Like, that's too, you know, whatever. I was like, everyone's doing that and I'm not doing it. I entered sort of accidentally in a way. There was like a spin studio that had a yoga studio and I was already doing spin. And so I actually went into a non-heated class the first time I went. And I was sort of like climbing the walls. Like I was like, oh my gosh, this is so slow. I wasn't used to the practice of stillness yet. So then I tried like a hot vinyasa class. And actually the instructor that I started with really has a yin-like approach to the beginning of his classes. And I found myself like really calm, like able to sit with the stillness. He did a lot of opening postures in the beginning, holding for longer amounts of time. And then I just like kept going. And over time, you know, besides seeing how I could improve like my physical practice, recognizing that if I was really anxious one day and I went into a yoga class, afterwards, I felt super grounded, super calm. And over time, the breathing part of the yoga experience became more natural for me. So I really kind of entered it from what a lot of people do, sort of a fitness or, you know, an exercise flexibility, you know, that was my entry point to yoga. And now I, you know, I can go to slow classes and meditative classes, and that's what I teach. You know, I'm not teaching hot vinyasa flow. So it's just really shaped my view of what it is and what it means in my life professionally and personally.
And I think that's actually something I wanted to address, because I know so many people listening to my podcast struggle with eating disorders and probably look maybe at even at yoga as maybe a purging technique for, you know, the weight loss with what they, you know, the compensation for what they're eating and things.
Yes.
I always get a little dicey talking about exercise and, and so with that, you know, you're talking about a completely different experience with yoga and not looking at it as this, you know, hardcore, like trying to get lean and fit and what you're talking about with the fitness. And that's really why I wanted to bring you on too, is to talk about, hey, yoga is not about that, right?
No.
There's this whole other experience of when you're doing yoga, that's not this, I got to get in there and do the, you know, the power yoga vinyasa, and like, you know, get the muscles. And, you know, I think that's really the thought a lot of times.
It is,
That it doesn't count.
I mean, in core, I never went to like places like Core Power where they have like fusion, where they're doing weights and things. I, interestingly, from the start, I really wanted yoga just to be yoga. But I think with the way my nervous system was, I mean, I think it's changed. I needed sort of that, like what we call like yang energy. I needed that expenditure before I could get more into the meditative state. Like I needed to have meditation and movement before I could ever get to a place where I did what I can do now. So yeah, it's definitely a lot of people think of it in that way. And that's just not how yoga even evolved or, you know, was developed thousands of years ago. So.
Because I'm really trying to right now focus some of the podcast on what is movement? What is exercise? What are the benefits? Because taking the focus off of exercise being connected to food, being connected to weight loss, being connected to allowing you to eat or not eat, or, you know, just the connection to the
store.
And what does exercise and movement look like when it's not eating disordered?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, as I'm sure you're aware, yoga has been used. I know Nido has used, I think they might have been, I don't know that they were the first, but they were, I had a client there that really got into yoga, and it's been used in treatment centers for quite some time, but restorative, slow, meditative posture so that, you know, in the beginning of recovery, people are not getting into this, like, I have to move to erase, you know, what energy I've put into my body. So the focus is really different than maybe a lot of people realize when we're focusing on it in this way.
So I guess that kind of brings me to when you're talking trauma-informed yoga. Now, is this something that's new and when you're one of the first studios to offer this, or how did you think, oh my gosh, I'm going to open a studio?
How did I? That's a good question. So I originally, how did I start thinking about it? I think I did a training through just some like neuroscience and yoga for mental health professionals. It was an online training. I think it was during the pandemic. And it was so fascinating to me. You know, I had read here and there about it. And so I just started like trying to get more and more, like doing more trainings and trying to get more certifications. And then this program that I was in through the Sundara Academy, you know, it's a lot of, there are yoga therapists, which is like an 850-hour program where they're working with the physical body, people with ailments, you know, mental health disorders. They are not mental health therapists, but they are yoga therapists. So there's sort of that realm. And then there's our realm as the mental health professionals that are trying to utilize these practices to help in our field. So it was tricky for me to sort of find my way. Like, what do I need? What will best support me with clients? How is this going to look in my practice? What I found was, as I was doing these trainings and my 200-hour yoga teacher training, that I was having a hard time blending it into like my sessions, because people were coming and wanting to talk therapy. And it just felt hard for them to move in a space in my, even though I expanded my office to get into these postures or things of that nature. So I started thinking, you know, what if I had a trauma-informed yoga studio, and this could be an adjunct to people's treatment, whether it's my clients or my colleagues' clients, and it could be another space for people to heal, that the cost point is less to enter and it's just more accessible to people. So through that journey, I entered a yoga teacher training program with Be the Change Yoga, which I'm starts in August. I'm doing their bridge program right now. But just sort of, it's kind of a blending of both worlds and figuring out what that looks like. So far, you know, I've had it separate than my psychotherapy sessions, and I'm just doing it on Saturdays, and people, clients or other people's clients or people in the community show up and do trauma-informed yoga. So it's been a fun experience. It's still kind of a learning curve, but yeah.
So what are some of the benefits of trauma-informed yoga?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, what makes it different is that there's less directional language than there would be in a typical yoga class. So there's a lot of invitational language that we use when we're cueing postures. So I always start my classes by saying, if you choose to lay in Shavasana the entire class, then that is the best option for you and your body. And so it's encouraging people to make choices moment to moment by paying attention and developing interoceptive awareness to their breath, to their body, to what feels good, to what doesn't feel good, what props they might need. And it takes practice and time, because people, I think, when they come in, want to do what other people are doing or what I'm cueing. And so it's teaching them class after class, like, pay attention. What is your body signaling to you? So there's a calming of the nervous system, because it is more gentle flow, or yin is really like holding long poses, reclined or on the ground. So no standing postures. People are learning to check in what feels right with their body moment to moment. And I'm cueing that throughout the class. So, you know, we're triggering the parasympathetic nervous system, developing awareness of mind and body. And there's the difference with, you know, EMDR, which I also use, is that we're not focusing on a traumatic event. So people are learning, as their mind wanders and as I'm cueing that, to come back to the body, to come back to the breath, so they can find a safe space in their body, which is what has been lost with trauma.
So you brought up EMDR, and I know maybe some people listening don't know what that is, but that's one of the main treatments we use for
sure.
People who've had trauma. And so who would be like a great person to come into your class? Is it somebody who is also doing EMDR, or somebody who's maybe just trying to get in touch with the trauma, or just totally disconnected from their body, or like who typically comes in?
I think it's a mixture. You know, there's some people that I'm doing EMDR with, or who are having a hard time even doing like an extended phase 2 of EMDR, which was the progressive approach, which Dolores Mosquera developed, that works with dissociation. And you're doing really small bits of bilateral at very specific moments and exploring the internal system. So that's kind of the focus of how her work developed, the way that we do EMDR with dissociative clients. So I have people who are phobic of even doing that are coming. And I have people that are in therapy doing EMDR or with other people doing other modalities. So it's really a mix. I don't always know. I have an intake and they fill it out, you know, but they choose what they disclose to me because they're coming in sort of with whatever anonymity they want into the space because it's just a group practice. So, but it's from what I know, it's a blend.
Okay. So I'm just wondering too. So someone who's thinking about, okay, maybe I want to go to this yoga studio, I've got some history of trauma. Are there specific types of trauma where this is more helpful than others, or?
No, I mean, I think it's really about the poses and what it can trigger. So if we, And everyone's different. This is the thing, things that I would imagine for one person, like, oh, this is a green light pose. You're not going to be triggered by this. I cannot assume that from what I've learned with my mentor and with trainings and things like that. So it's really like offering as many options as I can so that if someone does feel exposed, if they have like a hip opening exposed and their back is to someone. I mean, there's so many things that can trigger someone that they know they have the right to leave the room or get in a different posture or cover themselves with a blanket or whatever option might be available. But what people have reported so far is that they feel pretty grounded. The yin seems to be really relaxing and meditative for people. So it's interesting to see the two types of classes and what people are reporting in both. But I don't know that I would say it works for one type of trauma over another, because it's really activating parasympathetic nervous system and calming of the body and reconnection to the body.
Okay. So that also brings up another question. So are you the only instructor in the room? And if so, if somebody does get triggered, so I'm imagining somebody thinking, okay, what if I want to go to this class? What happens if I get triggered? Am I going to be safe? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to me if I'm in there and something comes up?
Sure. Yeah. Being an EMDR therapist for so long, working individually in that modality, I think that what I've spoken at length with my mentor about is like, what do I do? Like, if it's my client, it's more obvious. Like, I know that look on their face and they're having a hard time and something is happening. And what she, reiterates to me, and she's done this a long time over and over, is it's not about them never being triggered. Like, this isn't a yoga class where they're not going to be triggered. It's learning, oh, that's happening, being aware of it, and what choices do I have around that? So I'm offering as much support as I can. And with time, it's also the person learning, like, when I feel this way, I can go in child's pose if that feels safe. I can focus on my breathing. I can leave the room. I can signal to the instructor that I need, them to come over to my mat or whatever that looks like. So it's, as much as we don't ever want clients to be triggered or activated or any of those things, I think it's more about building trust that even when that happens, they can come back to a place of regulation.
It sounds like it's building some sense of safety for themselves too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Safety in their body, knowing that, hey, I can do this when I feel this way and this works, whether it's like, I mean, I've done things with clients like, okay, let's place a hand on your face and then blowing on the palm. And that works great for one person. Sometimes it's like hanging in ragdoll with the head below the heart, which calms the nervous system. And they're like, holy cow, that like grounded me more than anything ever has. So it's really kind of fascinating to see how much just these little things, and we're experimenting when it's one-on-one, like we're in the group, but it's more easy to do it one-on-one. Like, well, try this. What does this feel like? What do you think when you do this? What about if you put your knees together? What if a blanket is over your legs? What if you're in a standing posture? So it's really exploration and then gaining confidence that they can calm themselves down when they're really activated.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for someone who's thinking, oh gosh, I hear this all the time from people, I'm not flexible enough to do yoga.
Yeah.
I can't do the poses.
Totally.
What would you say to somebody?
I would say this is not a aesthetic focused yoga practice. A lot of what I do in the classes is, I mean, in yin, it's really prop heavy. So we've got bolsters and blocks and most of the poses that you do in a class like that, you're actually already using those. So there's a lot of options for you. In the more flow class, same thing applies. So for instance, if our peak pose is a warrior three balancing posture, it could be that your toe comes off the ground and that's it, comes up, comes down, and you're also placing your hands on blocks to support you. So it's finding like, hey, I don't have to be this flexible or do what everybody else is doing or not doing in the class. I can find ways with my body to find a stretch, to find something that feels good and works for me. So it's more, I cue more with props than I've ever had in any yoga class I've ever done. So that's it. Probably a different focus as well. Okay. Yeah.
You know, as you and I were kind of briefly talking before, I'm just thinking of, eating disorder patients and mm-hmm. really having that disconnect with their body and body image issues. And
yeah,
you think about, yoga for reconnecting the body and really being able to see themselves for what they actually look like and not being uncomfortable in being in their body and seeing it for how it is, like looking in a mirror or getting rid of the body dysmorphia.
Sure. So in the actual class, I don't have any mirrors at all. So to get the focus. So, I mean, there's controversy in the yoga world. Should you ever be in a studio with mirrors anyways? And it helps people in theory with alignment, but my thought is I am not putting mirrors in there because the focus is then going to be on what do I look like, whether that's someone who's in a restrictive eating disorder or is bulimic or is in a, you know, larger side body or smaller, whatever their body looks like, they may be focused on themselves. So, and that might be happening without mirrors, obviously, but it's that removes that element. So that's one piece. I would say it's really like, what I've heard the most, I would say, is people feeling like, okay, my body's too big to be in a yoga class, or I'm not flexible enough and things like that. And what's really wonderful to see is when they're like, hey, Mary, I got my toe off the ground, or like, I felt really good. Like I felt good that I did this and I felt safe in my body. And there were other bodies in the room like me. And so that welcoming in, I think that's welcome in most yoga communities anyways, but like I've seen to be a really beautiful thing. And then what I've known from clients that have done yoga in treatment centers is that it's really interesting when they can get into this meditative calming flow of yoga without it as like an exercise practice, there's a different connection that develops in the body because the focus is not so much on like this sculpting the body to look a certain way. It's like, wow, my body couldn't open in that way and now it can, or I couldn't balance on one foot and now I can. So that it's like the focus of the body with time becomes different.
No, and I think that's fascinating, right? Because there's so much talk now about like body neutrality, body positivity. Yeah. And I think that's always the focus is like, oh, I want to be so happy with my body or love my body. And here more of what you're saying is just kind of experiencing your body. Mm-hmm. Saying, wow, look what it can do. Look what I can experience.
Right. And how does it feel? Yeah. I always say that it's not how the practice looks in this class, but it's how it feels in the body. So if something is hurting, you know, and somebody's trying to push past that in a yoga class, that's never what we want. We want to find trust in the body and feel good. And so I think with repetitive practice, that becomes part of what people can learn to experience in one modality that hopefully can, you know, extend and expand to other areas of their life, you know?
Well, even as you were talking, I was thinking, gosh, it sounds kind of like emotion regulation a little bit. Being able to experience like, oh my gosh, all this panic or anxiety is coming up and learning how to calm the body.
Right, right. Yeah. And so you're moving into like, you're moving from, so let's say you're holding a more difficult posture, warrior three, or you're in a bridge pose, you're coming at penduation, I think they call it, in somatic experiencing. So it's the body learning to come in and out of regulation. I'm like upregulated, I'm in this posture, I'm holding, and then my body's coming down. And so it's almost like training for the brain. Like, look, you can be upregulated and then you can calm. And then the transition time becomes quicker as the brain learns to do that more easily.
And just, you know, I was thinking too, people get so disconnected with their hunger signals and their signals. And I'm wondering, do you think this kind of yoga can actually help people reconnect with all of their signals in their body in general?
Yeah. I mean, that would make perfect sense. And there's also, you're opening areas of the body that have are constricted. So a lot, you know, what we believe a lot is that we hold emotion and trauma in the hips. So the hips become really tight and things are pulling in, and you know, we're all connected. Everything is connected. So a lot of our twists are opening parts of the digestion, they believe. And so yeah, I think physically and on the emotional and mental level, there's so many ways in which this practice can benefit people.
It's fantastic. Because like you said, I know yoga has been such a big component of treatment, especially in centers, eating disorders for so long, but this is such a different niche and a different type of yoga that I'm just, like I said, I was so fascinated to have you on because I think there are so many people who have trauma that are, you know, dissociating from their bodies or so connected. I just find like, oh gosh, we need to have more of you. Like truly. Because because I think, you know, a lot of people can't find EMDR therapists or don't even know that it exists or what that is. But, you know, the more modalities we have or the more we have for people to treat their trauma or get in touch with their body, I think that's a great way to go.
And I think it's also, if you think of like the 8 phases of EMDR, you know, we're doing history taking and assessment and prep before we, and you think people think of EMDR as like you're doing eye movements and you're reprocessing trauma. Yes, that's a piece. That's the reprocessing piece of EMDR. But there are, just like anything else, there, this can be in my, how I'm viewing it as part of preparation for that work. Because if someone is not like, I don't want to bring up any piece of my trauma and think about it and find a negative belief about myself and do bilateral anything, what I've been doing now is like, okay, maybe we don't start there. Maybe they need more prep and confidence that they can go from dysregulation to regulation before they can even touch that, because the body has not, even the sensations of the body as they access the trauma are so, so frightening to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So curious, you started this during the pandemic. So are you offering virtual classes or is it only in person? Like, how are you doing this?
You know, I've done, you know, I haven't done this, the group classes for that long. So I'm sort of playing with it. You know, I, when I, by the time I opened, things had opened. So it was the middle of June. I think it was June 15th that everything opened. And so people were able to come in person. I've done 2 or 3 Zoom. I'm not opposed to that at all. It's more seeing like, what are people wanting? What is the demand? What is the interest? Zoom is just a really different modality. So some people love it because they can turn their cameras off and they can be in their own space. It's a little hard. I haven't done any yin because I provide all the props, all the mats, everything for people when they come in the space. And so if you don't have access to that in your home, that class is going to be a little difficult. So I've done flow on Zoom, and I'll just continue to see what the, you know, what are the needs and then how can I meet that?
Okay.
Yeah.
So could you tell us where you're located?
Yeah, I'm in Claremont, California. Okay. So near the Claremont Colleges in the Claremont Village.
Okay. So that's more of what I was asking too about the virtual, like if we're listening going, well, geez, I want to do that, but I don't want to be anywhere near you.
Totally. And I think that like, as long as there's an interest, I'm totally open to doing that. I did it for a few weeks in a row because there were clients that saying, I can't come this week. Can we do a virtual? And so we did that. And it was, it's a different learning curve, like all Zoom is for us, but, yeah, definitely. And I also might start, I haven't done this yet, but figuring it all out is like making some videos. So I've done some hip opening videos on my Instagram page, just showing people simple postures that they can try at home for hip opening exercises. So I'm doing a little bit of that, but I might move into doing also like full flows that are pre-recorded that people can access as well. So it's sort of like a work in progress, all of it.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've given a lot of great information. So you talked about the videos and your center. So how can people find you if they want to get in touch with you after the podcast?
Yeah. So if you go to traumayogatherapy.com, that takes you right to my trauma-informed yoga tab on my website. My website is just my name. So maryortenberger.com. On Instagram, if you they have Instagram, it's trauma yoga at trauma yoga. You can follow me there. I'm on LinkedIn and I think my email is also on LinkedIn. So, or you can email me from the website.
Okay. And don't worry if you guys didn't get any of that. I'll have information on the show notes so you can head to the website after and all of Mary's great information will be there too. So any last final words before we end?
No, just so, so excited about this and so excited to share. It's been a really fun and invigorating experience so far. So really happy to share with everyone.
I'm looking forward to hearing more about it as things progress. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.